My name's Shane Bassett from Health Combined. I'm sitting here with Professor Victoria Brazel from Bond University, and we're going to discuss today the way peer-to-peer education can be done for physicians. Hi Vic, how are you?
Good.
Thanks for being here. Thanks for your time. Are you able to give us an idea on some of the tips and tricks you do in your day-to-day experience when you're providing medical education to some of your peers?
Sure. I think the key to it, Shane, is that you've really got to keep it simple and you've got to keep it clear. And you really got to make it about your audience. Mm-hmm. So I basically have three rules that I have, which is to have three clear messages mm-hmm. for any talk or presentation that I'm giving. Number two, to make sure that I really connect with my audience with that. Mm-hmm. And then the third thing is to pay a bit of attention to my own style related to voice, to body language, and any audiovisual aids that I might be using.
Sure. Okay.
So if I was to start with that three main messages, I think this takes a bit of discipline. We often harbour under the myth that our medical audiences want lots of information and lots of tables and graphs. The reality is it's not so.
Yeah, right.
People can only process a certain amount of information.
Yeah.
So unfortunately, a lot of people, when they start their talk, they sit there with their PowerPoint.
Yeah.
And they start making a presentation based on which background am I going to use.
Mm-hmm.
The better thing is to actually get out a piece of paper
yeah.
and to think to yourself, what are my three take-home messages for whoever is watching this or listening to it or attending my talk?
Mm-hmm.
And I think then you start to have the discipline that when you come back, you go, that doesn't fit with my three messages, and you've got the license to get rid of it.
Right, and you stick to that as a process. You don't deviate from that. That's how you have made your sort of discussion successful.
Yeah, well, I think then it allows you to think about format
yes.
as long as you're clear on where you're going to go. So sure, you've always got to have some flexibility,
yep.
Which is actually a nice segue into thinking then about the audience
mm-hmm.
because that's going to determine how you present those three main messages.
Yeah, sure.
And look, as anyone in education knows, there's pros and cons to every format. The way that we're doing this has some visual appeal, using slides has some visual appeal, but obviously doing things in an audio podcast is a very efficient way and people might listen to it more because they're in their car or they're
yep.
doing something at home. So thinking about the format really says to ourselves, where our audience going to be when they listen to this? Where have they started in terms of the information that I'm trying to convey?
Yep.
And what's going to keep them interested in what I've got to say?
Yep.
So I think for people doing peer-to-peer education, once again, possibly the mistake is to think that people really want to sit down for a long time and listen to your area of interest.
Yep.
Whereas you've got to think, hang on, if I'm talking to GPs with a very broad range of interest, then I'm really going to have to give them, this is what I need to know to look after my patients best. This is what I need to know to answer their questions. This is what I need to know if I'm thinking about where to refer people.
Right. I just want to touch on the fact, do you think in your experience that educating doctor to doctor is different from the general population? Is that different or are the same principles apply?
I think it's far less different than we think.
Yes.
And most of the work that's been done on audiences through media and TV is that we need to communicate in short sentences with simple concepts, and we need to imagine that people have actually working at a grade 8 level.
Yeah, sure.
And I think we think, oh, doctors are much cleverer than that. But in fact, when it comes to communicating messages, most of our brains work the same.
Yep.
They like it clear, they like it simple,
yep.
and they like the take-home messages.
Yeah, okay. And you touched on engagement before, about engaging with your audience. What do you mean by engaging? What does that mean for you?
So I think when we're talking about peer-to-peer, it often means starting with a story, which in our case is often a medical case because
mm-hmm.
it triggers our interest. We start getting into that problem solving. We start generating our own questions that we want answered.
Yep.
So if you're talking about, imagine if a 54-year-old man came into your practice, had this problem, what would be the key things in the management of this patient? So I think a case is a really great way to start to trigger any more didactic material.
Yep.
And I think that engagement might also come sometimes just in the form of questions.
Yes.
What's the biggest problem that
yep.
you've got today? And so to use a hook like the advertising and marketing people,
yep.
it's not that you're being style only. This is just a way of people accessing your substance,
yep.
making it interesting for them. So I think you need a good start that is engaging and interesting and that makes it relevant for your audience.
Yes.
And then you need to present your information nicely and simply.
Yeah, that's a good point to touch on. What do you think the things to avoid when you're doing a presentation are when you're presenting facts and numbers or trials or data? Do you have any tips on that?
Sure. So I think the worst thing you can do is present one of those horrible slides with tiny fonts that is a table cut and paste from a research study. And I see that every conference I go to, usually accompanied by a statement like, sorry, you probably can't read this. If that statement comes out of your mouth, you never should have put that slide in there.
Yeah.
There are other ways to present that data. And so what I'd suggest is to have a table that you might actually have to redo. Maybe you can't cut and paste it from the journal article.
Yep.
And you just need to realize that that's the price of doing a good presentation.
Yep.
Or sometimes just to provide the narrative summary of the outcome.
Sure.
People who are interested can happily go back and look at that table. But I think when it comes to communicating clear messages, you want the message.
And that touches on the next point about how you communicate when you're doing, you know, these processes. What sort of, again, what tips and tricks do you have? What things do you avoid in, you know, to make sure that these things are successful?
Sure. So that is the sort of third point, and that is to use style to get your message across. And that's a combination of things, Shane. And for me, it's been a bit of a journey looking at where those problems are. But I think the first thing is to neglect the fact that your body language and your voice are the way that people access your thoughts.
Yeah.
And so when you look at the research on this, what we say is about 7 or 8% of our impact on an audience.
Really? That low?
That low.
Wow. Okay.
And that's why politicians, when they're on the news, smile and put their arms out because it gives a positive impression, even if what they're communicating is quite bad news.
Yeah.
And it's actually the same for us. The content is important, but what people take away as their impression of you is far more related to their voice, which is about 35%, your vocal variety, your vocal interest. Deeper voices tend to have a more authoritative style. So when we're doing presentations, go low, go slow.
Yes.
Or get excited at the appropriate time.
Yeah. Yeah.
So modulate it according to the message. But the killer thing in all of this is body language. About 55 to 60% of our impact.
And that's portraying a positive, sort of like confident demeanor when you're doing that. Yeah.
Exactly right. And having, I guess, being aware of your verbal and visual tics.
Yes.
So all of us tend to have mannerisms or things that we say as we're speaking, like, I think, I guess. So to watch yourself on a video and to see those things is hugely important so that you can start to do less of them when you're presenting or putting together a talk or a podcast in this case.
Right.
So I think some of that is about learning to know yourself.
Yes.
Developing some stage presence in terms of being able to stand still, being able to make eye contact with the audience, being able to use gestures appropriately without being ridiculous.
Yeah.
And then being able to use the audiovisual as an additional adjunct to that. Not too much, just enough.
I was going to touch on that. So I think what you're talking about is a balance between too much visual and then you lose some of the auditory input. Is that right?
Well, I think what we know from neuroscience, Shane, is that you can read or think or listen, but not at the same time.
Right, okay, yeah.
So if you say something and you want someone to be thinking about it, you have to stop and give them some time to do it.
Yeah.
And if you are talking, you can't be expecting them to read your slides at the same time.
Okay.
And what we know is that people will preferentially look at the slides. So if there is something on your slide for your audience to read, you need to stop, let them read it, and then give your pricey or summary or additional information because their eyes and their attention will be diverted to the visual 90% of the time.
That's a good tip, isn't it? Because we've all been to meetings when there's just a plethora of information and, you know, like, you know, people speaking and it just, you lose all of the impact of that, I think. That's a good tip. That's great.
I think the other thing I'd say is there is a little bit of a science to doing good slides.
Yes.
And generally that's about using images rather than text.
Yep.
And if you do use text very sparingly.
Yep.
And the couple of examples, just if you've got one of those pictures, say, of a video camera saying with the message of video yourself to get feedback, if it's the if the picture's got a little white background, make sure the rest of the slide has a white background.
Right.
Maybe set it a bit off center.
Yeah.
And there's some really good resources for this kind of slide preparation. It's not hard. You don't need to be a huge expert to do a good job.
Yep.
Obviously, there's a very good job that professionals do, but I think for most of us doing peer-to-peer education, you want good slides, and they should be icing on the cake, not the body of your message. Okay.
So you mentioned resources. So where do you go to find some of these resources?
Yeah, so what you'll find is just literally on the internet, but I have a few favourites that I follow. There is a fellow who does Presentation Zen is the name of his website.
Uh-huh.
His name is Gar Reynolds, and he actually is also on Twitter at Presentation Zen. There's also a couple of other people that I follow in the medical fraternity who are very interested in giving talks. And there's another one that I would say is a fellow called Ross Fisher, who's a pediatric surgeon, but he runs a whole blog on presentation skills, which we can provide some links for on your website.
Yep.
And there's a couple of other presentations that are particularly focused on those slide design things, which again, we could put the links up on the website.
So there's plenty of information out there. You just got to put a bit of effort to find it.
That's right.
Is that
and
right?
It's not hard. I think if you just take those principles, which are less is more, and keep the message simple.
Yeah, I think they're good tips.
Excellent.
Great. Well, thanks very much for your time, Victoria. Hopefully our audience have enjoyed just understanding a little bit about how you go through the steps and make sure that your presentations can be as effective and as simple to address your audience's needs. Thanks very much.